You know, I can remember as a kid wanting to be 16 so badly. All I wanted to do was learn to drive a car and experience that freedom of the open road. Anybody else? Hands up? It often seems like there's a flip side to that, of course, that as we get older, maybe there's, I don't know, a certain age number we have in the back of our thinking, past which seems like so much starts going downhill from there. Well, today we're going to challenge what some people call the aging process and the science behind this bold assertion. You are never young or old. Hey, I like where this is going already. Welcome to Sentinel Watch, where we look at life through a spiritual lens. I'm David Brown, and joining us for this conversation, I want to welcome Alison Hughes of Liverpool in the UK. She helps others find healing through Christian Science, a Christian Science practitioner, as she's known, and often speaks publicly on Christian Science healing in lectures. Alison, welcome.
Hi, good to be with you.
Great to have you. Also joining us is Abraham McLaughlin. He's a Christian Science practitioner, too, and he's from Boston, Massachusetts. Abe, welcome to Sentinel Watch.
Hi, David. Thanks. Hi, Alison.
Hi, Abe.
All right. Where do we start? You know, because it seems like this idea of aging seems very much anchored in common popular thinking, that as the years go by, we have, you know, seasons of growing up and maturing, getting older and infirm, and eventually, well, I think a lot of folks know where that seems to be headed. But Christian Science takes it in a completely different direction. And I'm wondering, maybe, Alison, how you see Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, talking about what aging is.
Well, the thing that I love about Mary Baker Eddy is that she challenges situations like this head on. And her main written work is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And one of the phrases that she uses is perfect God and perfect man as the basis of our thinking and therefore of our experience. And that helps me really challenge the ideas of twilight years or declining years. You know, those are phrases we hear quite a lot.
Yeah.
And when I think about that, I think of God, and one of the names in the Bible and that Mrs. Eddy uses is eternal life. And I think that when we start out with divine life as the one infinite creator, then life's always going to be expressing vitality, activity at the absolute peak of perfection. And that we're the representation of infinite life's right activity. And that's what actually characterizes us. Another name we can use for God is divine mind. And ideas, when you think of them, like joy and courage and honesty, they don't decline or lose strength. They don't age.
But how are we similar to an idea? I think that, you know, when we look around ourselves, we see evidence of, well, all kinds of things. And I think we categorize ourselves amidst that evidence. You know, if things start to sort of look run down around the house, maybe we think, well, time is passing. Or maybe we see something in our own, you know, reflection in the mirror or something like that. Is it enough just to say, I refuse to believe this?
No, not at all. Because I think just denial of what appears to be right in front of us doesn't get us very far. But when we start to actually identify ourselves as the image of God, the idea of divine mind, that becomes practical in our experience. We actually find that makes a difference. You know, prayer is actually transformative and practical. It's not just nice words. It does make a difference.
So when you say prayer, I don't think that a lot of us think of, say, when we're thinking about something like age, that we're necessarily praying as such. What do you mean when you say prayer?
Well, I think prayer is about listening to God. It's, in a way, turning away our thinking from what seems to be facing us and just listening to what God is actually telling us about our nature, about our identity, and following through with that.
Abe, does this resonate with you in any way?
Yeah, you know, you talked about at the beginning about we are neither young or old. And Alison was just talking about perfect God and perfect man. And there's a sentence in Science and Health that help me sort of sort through this? Because it can be a daunting thing, this idea of age. But Mazzetti writes, spiritual ideas, like numbers and notes, start from principle and admit no materialistic beliefs. And elsewhere she says, we are spiritual ideas. And so she's saying here, as spiritual ideas, we're like numbers and notes, not mortal beings in material bodies. And think of a number. Say you write down the number 7 on a piece of paper and you crumple it. Mm-hmm. Does anything happen to the number 7? It's not damaged, right?
Right.
Or I was at a performance of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony recently, and mm-hmm. 100 musicians on stage and 200 people in the chorus, and, you know, it is Ode to Joy. It is powerful. It is joyful. It is vibrant. And I thought, wow, at 200 years old, this symphony is doing pretty well.
I'll say,
and I thought, at 400, it's going to be just as good. And, you know, God creates us like a melody, not as a material being. And if we are a melody, then we're just as strong and clear and joyous at 200 or 400.
But, Ava, I think that's just it. I think a lot of us don't see ourselves as like a melody. How can, in a practical way, we see ourselves as manifesting or reflecting those mm-hmm. those limitless qualities, those ageless qualities, as opposed to sort of being part of this human form in a human body that has all of these human limitations that we hear about every day, you know, in media and in commercials and, you know, and just growing up, it seems like. How do we do that? Have you had an experience, perhaps, that you can share?
Yeah, I think it takes prayer. It takes disciplined thought because, yeah, there's a lot coming at us that says that we are falling apart, right? I have an example of a dog that we had, and this is little Jack Russell, who was full of energy. Mm-hmm. And so this dog was running and playing fetch one day, chasing after a ball. And there was a big dog with her, and she grabbed the ball, and the big dog fell on her and squished her into the top of a sprinkler head on a lawn. Mm-hmm. And she had a big gash in her underside. And she yelped, and we scooped her up, and we took her home, and she wouldn't let us touch her. And we stayed up all night just praying. And there's a phrase in Science and Health that says the divine energy of spirit, and spirit is another name for God, and just sort of affirming this idea of our dog as expressing the divine energy of spirit was her true identity, and that this mishap couldn't create decline or disability in her. And so we stayed up all night just asserting this in prayer. And the next morning, it was Sunday morning, we went to a vet, and we just thought, well, if she needs to be cleaned up at all, we'll do that. So he puts her up on the table, and he lifts up her back legs, and he looks under there, and he says, yeah, I see something happened, but you say this happened last night? It's completely closed up, and it looked like it happened weeks ago.
Hmm.
He said, I have no idea how that happened.
Wow.
And we said, well, we do. And so we took her off to church. She sat on my wife's lap during Sunday school. And then afterwards, she was out playing in the yard with the kids chasing the ball. So that's an example of, you know, asserting through prayer that the truth, the true melody of this little being was that she was expressing the divine energy of spirit. And it pushed away all the claims that she could be disabled and declining.
Sounds like your church has a new mascot.
Yes, indeed.
I like that. I like that. I'm just thinking of some of these common suggestions that seem to come to us as, you know, as we go around the sun. Sometimes it's, I'm having more difficulty seeing, you know, or we might even, you know, go to an eye doctor who says, well, you know, as you get older, you can expect to fill in the blank, right? And it's some kind of very negative prognosis that's associated with this idea of aging. Those are some pretty powerful suggestions that are coming at you. And sometimes they don't just feel like suggestions. Feels like this is what you're experiencing. You know what I mean?
Oh, I certainly do know what you mean. One of the things that I've really been praying about recently is this idea about moving forward. It's the opposite of decline, what we were talking about a little bit earlier when we think of it. And as you say, it's just a general idea in world thinking, isn't it? You know, how many times do we hear that a world situation maybe is blocked from moving forward? And I've been thinking recently of an experience that I had actually when I was thinking of becoming a full-time Christian Science practitioner. I have been praying with others over a number of years to witness healing, but at some point it just felt the right step to take it forward and advertise as a full-time practitioner in the Christian Science Journal. And so I got the application form and I was actively moving forward to do that. But at that time, one of my legs just started getting stiffer and stiffer to move. And then one day when I was out walking, something just happened to it and it just wouldn't work. I could hardly move at all. And it was very painful. And that went on for quite some time. And so I just parked the idea of applying to be a practitioner in the church directory. I mean, I just thought, how on earth could I possibly do that when I'm facing a really challenging physical situation myself? And as you say, again, associated with aging. So I parked the idea, but one day I was really praying, just quietly listening to what God was telling me, and a very clear idea came to me, just go forward and apply. And I argued back and I thought, well, how is that at all possible? I've got to see this healing of my leg first before I could possibly do that. But the idea just came again, just go ahead and apply. And I thought, okay, this is a spiritual intuition coming from God, who is spirit, as Abe was talking about just before. It's not my personal plan at all. So I did, and I applied, went through the application process. And at the moment when they contacted me to say, yes, we're accepting you for advertising in the Christian Science Journal as a practitioner, my leg was fully healed and I've had no problems since. And what it really, I think, showed to me, which is something what we've been saying, is the change in thought came first. I accepted the need to move forward and that I could do so. I gave my consent, and then the physical experience adjusted to reflect that. And it's the same with any challenge that we may be facing. And it's the same in our churches as well, actually, when you think about it. You know, consenting to the idea of progress, we can experience it. Eddie Insights and Health talks about progress as a law of God. And I often think, well, what does that look like? Well, doesn't it mean there's a constant unfolding of ideas and activity that's moving our universe forward, and that we can get to experience progress, not the other way around? But we do have to put it into practice and consent to that moving forward. And I've certainly seen that in one of the churches that I was a member of at one time.
Oh, say more about that. What happened? And I want to hear, we got to go further with this idea of consenting to progress, because I think a lot of us think, well, I am already consenting to progress, but I sometimes question that in my own thinking. But I want to hear what happened with did you say it was like a church group or something that you were involved with?
Oh, well, it was, I was a member of a Christian Science branch church, and the big old building wasn't suitable for what was needed anymore, and so we were building a brand new church, but we didn't have a lot of money. And so the architect designed the plans in sort of phase one and phase two, and phase two was the Sunday school building and phase one was the main church.
Yeah.
And we really only had the money to build phase one, but we were consistently praying and sharing spiritual inspirations at meetings and with each other every time we met, because we actually had a very active Sunday school of young people. And at one meeting we said, well, we haven't got the money to build the Sunday school, but we really haven't got the space in this new building for them to actively meet in, you know, what would be an appropriate way. Mm-hmm. And we just spent time at a church meeting quietly praying, and we consented to moving forward. We just said, actually, progress, this law of God, is going to take us forward, and we didn't know how. Mm-hmm. We told the architect what we were going to do, and within a week, the architect came back, because he had known of Christian Science from when he was younger and was very supportive of what we were doing as a branch church. And he came back and he gave us an interest-free loan.
Wow.
For the building of the extension. The lovely thing was we actually paid it back very quickly because money started to come from all sorts of unexpected sources. But what really has stayed with me was that we consented to move forward. We accepted that progress is a law of God and we were sticking with that. And well, that's what happened.
You know, I love what you're saying there, and it really is resonating with me powerfully because I think sometimes the things that we consent to, we don't realize that we're consenting to and wouldn't want to consent to if we were aware of it. You know, I often think that I don't have enough time in my day. I often think that my schedule is just too crammed with things going on. And I do feel, and I think that this is a great space here on Sentinel Watch to talk about these sort of common challenges that you talk about, the challenges facing your church. And there are a lot of organizations that sometimes feel like, well, you know, we have an aging group of people who are getting together and that's just, you know, and then they sort of start moving forward in quotation marks from there. But in a way, the things that we're consenting to by accepting those beliefs, we can't at once say God is all power, God is all, and then think that there is a moment there where maybe God isn't all, that somehow time has a power that can dictate its own ideas about the way forward.
I think you're exactly right. You know, I think there's the idea of consenting to the purpose that God has for us.
Say more about that. How do we know what sort of purpose God has for us?
Well, I was reading the Moses story recently, and, you know, Moses in his eighth decade was tending sheep in a remote desert, and it seemed like he was past his prime, right? But then he comes across the burning bush, and God basically says, I've got a big purpose for you. You're going to help free my children from the bondage of slavery, and you're going to get them to the promised land. Mm. And I was thinking, you know, you could say God didn't create us without giving us all the purpose we can handle. And he gave Moses a lot of purpose, and it supercharged Moses' life, right? And the Bible says that when he did pass on, Moses was 120 years old, and his eye was not dim, nor his natural vigor diminished. Hmm. And I think there was at the burning bush and in the moments afterwards, there was a consenting to, oh, there's a purpose for me that I hadn't realized and that I can consent to and I can grab onto. And, you know, that energized him. And I think we can all find that. And it takes that turning away from all the stuff coming at us and consenting to the idea that because God made us, he gave us purpose.
I like, too, what this idea of consent is implying. It implies a kind of humility that, you know, maybe we don't realize we're not demonstrating by thinking that there's no purpose for me.
Right. And I think I see a lot of people, particularly after retirement,
you know,
they've got lots of purpose when they have a job, but then get into retirement and the sense of purpose kind of diminishes.
What's my purpose? Yeah.
What's my purpose? And that's where I think that prayer and that reaching out to God and saying, what would you have me to do, God?
I'm so glad that you mentioned Moses because I hadn't really given a lot of thought to that. But at the same time, it's been a long time since I've seen a burning bush and much less felt like it was speaking to me. But I say that sort of joking around because I think a lot of us feel like, how do we know when God is speaking to us? What does that mean to be divinely led that way? What does that mean to you, Abe?
Well, I think it's trusting that because God made us, he gave us a purpose. And I have a recent example for myself. I had been working at the Christian Science Church for 3 decades, and it was an interesting, fulfilling career. But at some point, I was thinking, well, isn't there something else? And I, you know, Allison talked about going into the full-time practice of Christian Science. I had always thought that was for other people, people who had more spiritual intuition and more spiritual understanding. So I'm thinking, well, I think, you know, there's something else that I could do, but I don't think the practice is it. And a thought came to me one day, sort of out of the blue, and it was, do you really think your service to church doesn't include healing? And it sort of brought me up short. And my answer had been, no, I don't think it does. But it was so pointed that I realized there was only one right answer to that question. And, you know, a pathway opened over the course of a year and a half or so for me to step away from the day-to-day work of church and to really deepen my spiritual study and to answer the phone when people called and help people get to healing. And so I think it's true for all of us that God has a purpose for us, and that can include healing ourselves and others. And what a grand purpose that is.
I'll say. It's you know, something that I never really truly, I don't think I really truly appreciated until fairly recently, was how important healing work is, the demonstration of these lessons from the Bible and the revelations that Mary Baker Eddy shares with us in Science and Health.
You know, I've been thinking about this recently because whether you've been a Christian Scientist for a long time or just learning about it now or of other faiths also, we've all experienced good in our past, perhaps they've been healings or where we've seen progress, maybe in our church or something like that. And people sometimes start saying, oh, well, you know, that was all in the past and things don't seem to be quite as good these days. And what I've been really thinking about is, but, you know, those transformative ideas are always present because they're an expression of the God who is infinite creative mind, the source of infinite intelligence. And infinity isn't time limited, so those ideas aren't either. And I often think that as we recall, perhaps it's a sentence from the Bible or Mrs. Eddy's writings or perhaps from some other faith for some of our listeners, but as we're recalling an idea that helped us in the past, it's actually in your consciousness right now. You're acknowledging and feeling that very thought right now, and your experience in the past just goes to show that those ideas are practical. You know, I really feel that we don't want to stay in the past. You belong to the present. There's a wonderful definition of renewal in the Greek in the Bible, and one of the definitions of it is the word naos, is belonging to the present. And I love that idea because that in a lot of ways just gets us to think about how all fresh new ideas are constantly meeting fresh needs, whatever that may look like, whether it's in our church or it's in our home life or physical issues. I think sometimes we get quite drawn to talking about the past and looking at it sort of with rose-coloured glasses and things were better then. Maybe we're talking about, I don't know, previous church or civic leaders like Gandhi or Mandela and thinking of all that they did back then, all that we were doing back then. And that's truly inspirational, what they accomplished. But that's the point, isn't it? It's inspiring us to take this forward. And those spiritual inspirations are just as provable now, today. Those ideas, in fact, Christ Jesus was putting into practice millennia ago, are still available right now because Christianity is a science and those laws are just as available today as they were then.
Mrs. Eddy in Science and Health has a really, it's a story that I think stood out to me certainly when I was studying Christian Science in Sunday school. It's in the chapter Footsteps of Truth, and she writes quite a bit about this issue that we're discussing here, these notions of age and aging, right around pages 244, 245, and in this section, there's a very famous story that she shares. It's actually a story that came from a London medical magazine called The Lancet, and I bet you both know what I'm referring to, but she's recounting this story that appeared in a medical journal of a woman who was young. I believe she was in her 20s, and she was disappointed in love, and she had very much sort of, it seemed like, would often just stare blankly out a window. And in that mental state, the years went by, and she seemed not to age at all. And by the time she was in her 70s, people thought she was still a very, very young woman. And the point, as I saw it, is when I first heard the story, I thought what Mrs. Eddy was saying there by using that illustration, that she was in a way saying, well, this is all in your head, that if you're unaware of your age, then you won't show it. But I actually think that she's going considerably deeper here. I think what she's saying is that there is no law at all. There's nothing determinative about that number, about age. And that is, as Mrs. Eddy writes, literally, she says, impossibilities never occur. One instance like the foregoing, she's referring to this, proves it's possible to be young at 74. And the primary of that illustration makes it plain that decrepitude is not according to law, nor is it a necessity of nature, but an illusion. And I think that's just, this also gets back to some earlier themes we were talking about giving the consent. Who do we think we are is in a way what this comes down to, and by what laws do we live? And we have to question that constantly as we learn more about God, because inevitably this points to us not as physical or material, but as wholly different, as spiritual beings. And spiritual law is what actually governs our life. And the more that we learn about what God is, the more we recognize those spiritual qualities and how we cannot do anything but reflect those qualities of goodness, of consciousness, of, well, as you were saying, the eternal now, in a sense. That's what we really seek to understand more deeply, I think.
Absolutely. One of the many issues that's often associated with aging is memory loss, the capacity to know what we need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were just saying, that's not limited by age. With one God who is infinite mind, who's infinitely creative, then intelligence is always being expressed in just the way that we need it. And I had an experience of that when I was working at a university. So it really taught me a lesson about how we don't have to rely on our own personal sense of memory or mind. I was working with a number of European universities in Europe, and I was on a business trip with partners from the various countries and discussing with them the first phase of the project, all that we'd done, what we had to do next, what they individually had to do, all the budgets and all this sort of thing, lots of detail. And I promised to email it to them when I got back, because I was in charge of doing all of that, and would send them all very detailed instructions about what had to be done in a certain time frame. And I'm meticulous about keeping all my papers together.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just horrified when I got back to my office to find I couldn't find my notes, not one of them anywhere. And I literally took my office apart looking for these, praying, I have to say, at that point, rather haphazardly, God, just please help me find these notes. And then I realized I couldn't find them at all. And I really just stopped. And I thought, I'm just going to turn my thinking to what divine mind at this moment is knowing and listen. What we were talking about prayer before, really. And a little phrase that Mrs. Eddy wrote in a poem, which is actually one of the hymns that we often sing in a Christian Science church now, came to mind: seeking and finding. And I stood there and I argued back and I said, well, I am seeking, but I haven't found yet. But that little phrase kept coming back to me. And then a really strong intuition to just sit down at my laptop and start typing. And I did, and I typed for about half an hour. And as I did, new ideas came, and I just kept going and going and going, till in the end, it suddenly stopped. And I looked at it and I thought, yes, that's right. And I sent it to them, and it was. Now, what was awe-inspiring was, though, I never found the notes. And I realized later on that I hadn't needed to, because the ideas that I needed to communicate were being supplied to me. The papers weren't necessary. Now, it wasn't about relying on personal memory, because the typed email was way too detailed for that to have even been possible. What it did prove to me, and I found it so helpful in the years since, is that we can really trust the God who is divine mind to intelligently reveal just what is needed in the right way, precisely at that moment. Now, I'm not saying that God knows all the details of our work to-do lists, but it's really what we've been saying. We can expect to see the creativity and infinite intelligence of divine mind's ideas just coming to light in our experience in tangible ways. This is how prayer is practical.
That's wonderful.
We were talking about, you know, this idea of consenting to that we are not material mortal beings fundamentally. And I have to, if I can sort of geek out on a Sentinel Watch thing, David, one of my favorite episodes recently was when one of your guests was talking about Jesus raising the son of the widow in Nain. And this man has been dead for a time. And Jesus says to him, young man, arise. And one of your guests said, who was he talking to? Because the body was dead, right? And who was he talking to? And when I heard that, I thought, who was he talking to? And I came across a phrase that Mrs. Eddy uses, which is our spiritual preexistence as God's child. And I thought, wow, if we have a spiritual preexistence as God's child, then how can we be subject to decay or decline or even death? And I think if we consent to the idea that we have existed like a number or a note for all time, we can put out of our thought these ideas of decline and decay. And you used an example of that Mrs. Eddy wrote about the woman lost in love. She also uses an example of an actor who was old and infirm and could barely walk himself to the theater every day. But as soon as his cue was spoken, he leapt onto the stage with full vigor. And that points to, what are we believing we are? Do we have a spiritual preexistence as God's child, full of energy and life and eternal being? Or are we, you know, falling apart? And what we believe matters and has a direct effect on how we can walk through life.
I want to just throw something out there and get your reactions to it just one by one. I'll turn to you first, Allison. If I were to say that we don't have to be subject to this notion of aging, is that really true? Can we really make that audacious claim that we aren't subject to anything that suggests that we have to age or go into decline? Can we really make that assertion and prove it?
Well, I think that we can, because we're starting from God's perception of us. We're starting from God's point of view, how God sees us. And the very first book of the Bible, Genesis, talks about God making us in his image. That means that we're the actual reflection of God, and therefore our true Christ-like spiritual identity is an expression of these qualities of thought, in a way that we've been already talking about, you know, courage, honesty, compassion, whatever. that's our true spiritual identity. Well, that doesn't age. And the more, as we've been talking about, giving our consent to that fact, really letting God's perspective take charge of our experience, the more that we actually find that that plays out in our experience, that prayer is practical, that we are able to move forward, we are able to prove this in a practical way. People through the centuries have done that. People in the Bible were proving it. There's a story way back in the Hebrew scriptures about, well, Moses actually, that Abe was talking about. You know, they lived to considerable age, according to Bible records, and were still able to express vitality, right activity, and doing all sorts of things because they had come to understand in some small measure their relationship to God. And that's certainly what Christ Jesus was proving, as Abe was talking about, you know, raising the widow of Nain's son. And as you were talking about with the experience that Mrs. Eddy refers to in Science and Health, it's not too big a claim. And there are plenty of experiences in the Christian Science magazines, the Christian Science Sentinel, Christian Science Journal, and also in the back of Science and Health, many pages of healings, and where people have been proving that actually we don't have to give our consent to decline. It's the very reverse. As we consent to progress, we can actually see that tangibly in our experience.
Abe, how do you answer that question? I mean, can we make that claim that we aren't subject to any of the claims of aging?
I think we can, and I think we're not the only ones doing it. There are studies out in the scientific community. There's one that was done by Harvard a number of years ago where they put a group of older people into a controlled environment, and the environment was like their lives had been 20 years ago. All the TV shows and all the advertisements and all the technology and everything was 20 years old. And they found that within just a few days, all the subjects of the study were acting younger, and their eyesight improved and their joints improved, and there was a physical change based on just the mental expectation of these subjects. So that's a hint, I think, of a bigger spiritual truth that I think we're reaching for and that Christian Scientists are proving. Someone once said that age is an accumulation of unsolved problems. Work out your problems. What the Christian Science periodicals show every week and every month is people working out their problems and, I think, putting off the claims that would slow us down and drag us down. There are healings every week and every month of conditions that seem to be incurable. In fact, I was just going back recently through the periodicals, the Journal on Sentinel, and looking for conditions that the medical world would say are incurable. And there are lots of them healed. All kinds of things that, if unhealed, become an accumulation of problems and sort of drag us down. But I think we can say we can heal our problems and that age doesn't have to drag us down.
Abraham McLaughlin is a Christian Science practitioner from Boston, Massachusetts. We've also been speaking with Alison Hughes, a Christian Science practitioner and lecturer from Liverpool in the UK. Alison, Abe, thank you both so much for joining us on Sentinel Watch. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Be great to talk with you.
Are you planning on attending the 2026 annual meeting of the Mother Church? It's Monday, June 8th in Boston and also online. Hear reports from officers of the Mother Church and the field, along with an exploration of this year's theme, Ye Are the Light of the World. Let your light so shine. Register at christianscience.com/annual meeting. Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm David Brown. Our podcast is produced by Carlos Machado, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer, Amy Richmond. Our production assistant is Natasha Telcho. Our editor is Lisa Rennie Seitzma. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noel Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Ian Case.
Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo. We'll talk again soon.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.